2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Afternoon, everybody. This is your DFS Army Daily Dispatch brought to you by DFSArmy.com. And I am your host today, Boomer's Daddy. And joining me is Mr. Bear here. Shy, how you doing today, bub?
Good, Keith. How are you?
Oh, man. It's good to be back, brother. Good to be back.
It is good to be back. I agree.
So, want to go ahead and, for those of you that don't know, go ahead and give a shout out to our boy who is no longer with us. He's still in the industry, but just moving on. Bigger and better things, or at least different things. I don't know about bigger and better, but at least different things. He'll still be around in Slack, just chit-chatting and everything, and he might drop in on the pod, but Al is no longer with us. Wish him the best of luck. And obviously, it's going to be, I don't want to say it's going to be hard to replace him because it's not. It's just more like, you know, it's going to be different without him.
Yeah.
It's definitely going to be different without him. So, it's been a lot of fun, trying to get prepped for this NBA season. Kind of had to take the summer off of the MLB pod, just family stuff and everything, but we're racketing it up here. So
yeah, so I'm right there with you. I'm super excited to be back. Certainly we'll miss Al on the pods and in Slack. We wanted to not so much dive into today's preseason games. I'll have some information up later on today, but for now, what we wanted to cover essentially is what to expect this season from us. We wanted to cover some of the questions that I asked some of our members that they wanted us to cover, specific to lineup construction, specific to contest selection, and what type of entries and how much to play a night and all those kinds of things, and some other specifics which we'll cover. So not so much, you know, who to plays today, but kind of more an overall NBA view.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they're going through preseason on the court. We're going through preseason here in our little – trying to get everything kind of figured out on how we want to run things, and obviously for me to get my chops back, because actually doing a podcast, when you get out of the habit of it, you never realize exactly how much it became second nature. So give us a little bit of leeway. It'll roll back in and we'll be popping in no time. So yeah, not only that, what this is going to do is it's going to help, you know, kind of get a breakdown on exactly how we attack the NBA here at the DFS Army. It's going to be a lot of fun. We absolutely crush, and we continue to grow at a very, very, very rapid pace. So it's more important now than ever that we make sure that we have our ducks in a row to make sure that we cover as much as we possibly can. So we're not repeating ourselves 15 times a day as well. So,
which we'll end up doing regardless, but yes.
Yeah, well, we always know that we're going to end up, repeating ourselves. But if there's something that we can do to make sure that we don't, then I'm all down for that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right, let's get started. Let's get rolling here. You obviously have a bunch of questions. I'm going to start one off because I only have one.
Okay.
This came from NBK Fish. on our chat, and he goes, "I'm trying to get, or I'm gonna try some NBA this season, so I keep doing DFS after football. I don't follow NBA besides the top players. That's all I know about. I'm gonna watch the tutorials that we have on the site, and I can't play every day once the season is in full swing. So my question is there. My question is there a method of telling me if I should play a certain slate, like less games in the slate or more to target certain teams, etc.?" My response to that would be this. In the NBA, there is a lot of...
What is that?
What? Oh, anyways, in the NBA, there's a lot of overlap as far as roster construction on shorter slates. It's you kind of have to be a little bit more fine. You can't take as many risks. I always try to play as big of a slate as possible because I feel like we have an edge, you know, in those type of slates. There are times where you're going to grab, what is it, 4 or 5 games on the West Coast. Yeah. And you can just basically play the players in those teams. You know, you can do it on the late slate. You can do it on the main slate. You can do it on every slate that they're there for. The biggest thing is don't feel like you have to play every day. Even I don't play every day, and I do this for a living. Bear, I don't think that you play every day either, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay. And the reason for that is there's 82 games in like 115 days or 130 days or whatever, and that's before we even get to the playoffs. Okay. NBA is a different animal. There is not any injury news, so if you can't be by your phone to make sure that you are within chat, participating and watching watching what our coaches do, then don't play that day. It's just that simple. If you can't put in that last 30 to 45 minutes before lock outside of your research time, just to make sure that you don't, you know, get popped with a late scratch or something like that, then I would not play that day. You could probably be very successful playing the 5 to 9 game slates, and those will happen about 2 to 3 times a week. So, because on Saturdays the games are usually kind of spread out throughout the day, so that's how I would approach it. That's how I do approach it. Now I usually play 5 days a week, and take the weekends off, but it's going to change a little bit this year because of the way that we're doing our scheduling for our coaching. But that's how I would do it, is make sure that if you're not able to be there for the last 45 minutes before lock, then you don't play, and make sure that, you know, you give yourself enough room for error, which I don't feel like you get that on short slates. But you're not getting so overwhelmed on the, you know, 11 to 13 game slates. That will happen from time to time.
Sure.
So that's my, that's all my take. So, Bear, go ahead.
I mean, I agree with a lot of that. I also think the key, I mean, if you can't be around an hour before lock, and when I mean around, I mean, be able to just pay attention to what the coaches are saying, to what the news is inbound, to all that kind of stuff, then you definitely shouldn't play. And if you do want to play regardless, then, you know, lightly is fine. But, you know, be prepared to accept, you know, things not working out for you, basically. I think I also want to cover – so one of the questions was, you know, hey, what do you play? How do you play every night? And so the night when to reiterate, I don't play every night, but when I do, the nights I do play is about Probably 60% of what I'm doing is head to head. I think you and I are very similar. Sometimes it's higher if I like what I see. If I like the competition, I'll play, you know, maybe 80%. But we do really, really well in head to head. And so you'd be foolish to not take advantage of that. And, you know, I'll play triple ups. I'll play quints. I'll play, you know, 50-50s. I'll play all those. Just to make sure that my bases are covered and at minimum I'm in the easier contest, easier to hit the green. So that's how I'll start it. Usually I'll be about 75% cash games of the ones that I just mentioned. Now, I think you and I are a little bit different in how we approach our quints. So whereas you'll probably use the same cash line, a lot of people use the same cash lineup for all of their double ups and quints. I use the same for my double ups and head to heads, but I switch up a little bit for my quints. I'll use the same for triple ups. Triple ups and double ups have pretty much the same cash line, maybe a couple points different, depending on the night, but it's usually not that big of a difference. And so I'll enter the same head to head lineup as in the triple ups. But for the quints, I go a little more of a hybrid. For those of you that are familiar with how Geek does his NFL picks, I've got very much hybrid NBA picks. Guys that still have a floor, maybe a little bit more of a risk on the floor, but they have the upside that can hit that 50 plus. To where some guys, like, you know, they're going to hit 18 to 30, and that's kind of where they're capped, which is good for double ups. But for quintuple quints, you kind of have to be a little more aggressive. So for those of you who don't know, the quintuple ups are, you know, they pay five times, so if you enter $5, they'll give you 25 back. And then on the tournaments, so that's how I approach cash. For the tournament, it's a different ballgame. Some people, well, forget some people. What I do is when I'm entering a single entry, I'll take pretty much my core in my cash, and I'll take anywhere between one to three plays, and I'll modify them to a much less chalkier play. Players that aren't being talked about, players that are kind of forgotten about because there's another juicier matchup somewhere else, and all the attention goes there. I'll look elsewhere. I'm always looking out in the industry and in the league, and I watch, you know, the coaches' interviews and after their practices and shoot arounds and the players' interviews. Get a lot of good information there. So stuff that I hear from those sessions is where I'll go. I'll say, okay, I think I might have an advantage there. Let me play this guy or this position versus this team, or, you know, whatever the case might be, and I'll put that into some single entry. As far as larger, you know, multi-entry stuff, there's really, for me, I have one of two ways that I do that. First of all, if I'm going to enter one of those, you know, 100,000 person tournaments, I'm not taking a single shot. I mean, it's one in 100,000. That's kind of a money pit, right? It's kind of sucking money away. There aren't many. Your odds aren't good, put it that way. So I'm doing at least 10. That's how I like to enter the bigger tournaments. And I think 10 is kind of a low number, but, you know, if they're $9 a piece, that's almost 100 bucks there alone. So I get that. If money is an issue, you're probably better off multi-entering the lower entry tournaments. Yes, the prizes are lower, but you're not paying $300 for 30 entries either. So you can look at those. You know, there's some $5 entries that you can get up to 20, 25 entries. So I look at a lot of those types of tournaments, and I like to do it one of two ways. Either I pick my core, I, you know, like, love, adore in our domination station, which is our optimizer, and use that core to kind of fill in the main and then let the DS fill in the rest. Or I kind of let the DS do it all. It just depends on how I'm feeling. If I find out throughout the day, I'm like, you know what? Bobby Portis is going to play 40 minutes today against a team that soft down low. Well, I'll pretty much put Bobby Portis at like 80% and go from there. So that's how I like to approach it.
Oh, Bobby Portis. Bobby Portis. Wow. Yeah, I'm pretty much the same. I know that, like, if I take, you know, my head-to-head or my cash game allocation, basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a vast majority of it in head-to-heads. I'm going to put them in as many different buy-ins as possible. I'm going to mix it up. You know, I'm going to try to, you know, get some higher dollar ones in there and get some lower dollar ones in there. I'm going to mix up my opponents. I don't mess with double ups. I try to stay away from the lineup seller trains that end up happening. But I'll go into triple ups and I just basically use those as a buffer. So if my cash game lineup goes off, then guess what? It's in every contest. My cash game lineup will be in every contest that I play. Because it's the one that you feel the best about. It's the one that you should put the most money on. And it's the one that, should return the biggest dollar amount, on a consistent basis. I'm not talking like one of your GPP lineups hitting and bringing home, you know, five figures. I'm not talking that. I'm talking about, you know, on a night in, night out basis. That's what you build up throughout the whole year, to where you can take shots at, you know, live finals, to where you can take shots at some of these bigger tournaments that they'll throw out there for you. So I'll play Quints, but it's mainly, it's not a lot. Like I'll throw it in one or two because I want to be able to capitalize also some leagues, you know, some of the 100-man leagues, because I want to be able to capitalize, because there's a ton of times where, you know, I was just running projections and everything, and I forgot to enter any other tournament or anything else other than my head-to-heads and just played that, and I ended up sweeping the board. Well, that's great. That's awesome, but there was no upside there, you know, and one of the worst things about it is putting up a 365 with your cash game lineups and you're sweeping all your head-to-heads, and you know it would have done some damage in tournaments and it not being there. So that's why I'll try to put it in as many contests as possible. And then from there, I'll go and I'll start switching it up as far as my GPP lineups.
Yeah, one of the things we'll hear us say a lot is make sure to put your cash lineups in at least some GPPs, because I think all of us players have been there where, you know, your cash lineup goes off and you'd be like top 10 in the tournament had you entered it. So don't do that to yourself. I see particularly in Slack when somebody says, oh, I just put this in a double up and it hit like 403. This is only in a $1 double up. I'm like, oh my lord.
I've seen it. I'm like, you just probably made one of your better lineups that you're gonna make all year, and you only got $1.80 back. So
exactly.
So
yeah, sucks. But so that's that. I am a very big fan of the single entry tournaments. You know, that doesn't mean go play in the $1 ones. You can, but for me, I think the best return. So FanDuel has a $33 one, which is, I'm pretty fond of. You know, it's not like 10,000 players. It's, what is it, 1,000? Maybe 800, something like that.
What, the Slam?
Yeah.
Slam's usually right there around, I think it's around 10, 15.
Good for me.
So, that's one that's putting out like 50 to 100K to first every night.
No, not that one. I'm talking about... Talk about the smaller ones, the ones that have about 800 entries in it. I'll look it up here in a minute while we're talking here. But I think you're giving yourself a better opportunity to win in those. You know, like, for example, here there's a $9, well, it's a multi-entry, but it's 653 entries.
Oh, you're talking about the single entries.
The single entries.
Okay, I got you now.
Yeah, the single entries.
I thought you were just talking about the Slam. So The mid-level buy-in is what is what you're talking about, where it's a single entry, mm-hmm. and you're basically talking, depending on the size of the slate or what day it is, it's going to depend, but it's usually going to be right there around the 800 to 1,200 people for most
of the
year.
Which is really a great number. Because then you look at, like, the Slam, you look at, it's been a while since I've played, man, I'm forgetting the names of the massive ones. You know, but the massive ones, the ones with 80,000 entries. I mean, if you're not hitting first or second, I mean, top five is kind of painful, considering, you know, first place will take 100K, and fifth will take, like, 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 or whatever. I mean, just a major, major, major drop-off between first and third. So, you know, if you're going to go for those, go for the throat. Otherwise, don't play in those. Stick to the single entries. I've had nights where, and I got to give props to Luz for this, because I was entering 15, 20 entries into the big tournaments, and I would do well. I would definitely, you know, yield some results. But those same high scores that I would hit there, Luz is like, dude, you would have taken first place in this single entry, you know, $33 entry or, you know, $75 entry, whatever it is. And I'm looking there, and you compare the scores, and it's like, yeah, you got to start playing those. Once you're comfortable with your game and putting together lineups that can go off, again, you're not going to have that every night, but when you're feeling like you are, those are the ones to attack. Those are the ones that I like to hit.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing that I like to tell people is, you know, play the same amount. Every time you're going to play the same amount every single day, and do it for a month. Or do it for a week or 2 weeks, whatever you want to do. It was, you know, if you bounce around up and down, and then you're going to, bouncing around in your contest selection is going to cause your bankroll to bounce even more.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're going to enter, say you start out with five, and you're going to enter a $5 double up, and you're going to hit. Okay, well, then you enter a $5 double up, and say you do that for like 3 days, and you hit and everything, and then you start to, you know, jump it up even more, and then 2 days of losing just wipes out your 5 days of winning, you know. So that's the biggest thing, is like, if you're going to allow yourself $200 for 2 weeks, so you're going to play $100 a week, okay, then you should play the exact same contest every single day that you play until you use that $100. It doesn't matter if you win or lose, play the exact same contest every single week. There's a reason why these sites send out emails and promotionals, and they put their highest dollar, because they want you to play those, and it's tempting to play those. Play them in the second half of the season after you've built up your bankroll. I would really, really, really stick to trying to build your bankroll for NBA as much as possible. And that's the only thing that I could really, if I could go back and I could change anything about the start of my DFS career, I would not worry about the money that I was bringing in. I would worry about the process. I would worry about the selection, the contest selection, and I would worry about getting to understand the scoring systems on the sites that I'm playing, because as I'm going and as I'm working, you know, into tougher competition, which is higher buy-in levels and so on, then I'm going to have a much sounder foundation. If you can't lose for a week and not tilt, then you probably shouldn't be playing at that level. I'm just saying, if you, and I'm not immune to this, guys. I get the inkling, and I'll drop into the, you know, the huge buy-ins. I think, what was it, last year, I dropped into the $1,500 buy-in one day, and I was done for a week. Like, I just felt defeated for a week. Not that I can't lose that. The money wasn't, it was, It was the timing leading up to it. I think Cameron ended up getting sick that day, and then Heather was late home from work, and then we had an issue with the DS. And instead of me just being smart and backing out, I left it in there and took a shot, and I wish I hadn't. Like, usually when I tilt because of me and not because of what happens on the court.
Sure.
So sure. That's the biggest thing, is if you're going to play a $10 double up and you're only allowing $50 a week, guess what? You know that you're hinging on that $10 double up. And if you can't afford, or not afford, but if you can't lose every single night and not feel it and not tilt, you probably shouldn't be playing at that level to start off until you get more comfortable. Unless you just get hit with a week's worth of, you know, ice-canceling games and you're getting screwed. Like, that's different.
It is different, but even that happens. I mean, it just does. And you know, obviously to the extreme of if it happens several times, it's messed up. Yes, I get that. But here's something that I want to tell everyone who is new, and even not new to NBA DFS. Just because a player does not produce does not mean two things. Number one, doesn't mean he sucks. He's in the NBA. Way better than... He's probably in the top 1% of sports in the world when it comes to basketball. Number two, just because that situation didn't work out doesn't mean it was the wrong play.
Right. There's a difference between playing the right guy for the wrong reason and getting the result that you want, and playing the wrong guy for the wrong reason and not getting the result.
Yeah, exactly. And just because it didn't work out, you do the exact same play over and over again.
Yeah. It's, as the National Cellular Alert Broadcast System buzzes me.
I was going to say the same thing. Mine says presidential alert.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, hopefully we survive that.
Yeah.
So, if not, it's all being recorded, right? The bottom line is consistent wise, if you're making that right play, it'll work out most of the time. I mean, listen, I spent many years playing high stakes poker, and it's really very similar. Like, you make the right decisions at the right times. Over the long haul, it's going to work in your favor.
Yeah, it's just all about consistency.
Right, and statistics, frankly, and odds. So that's that. So we got that covered. Anything you wanted to add to that before we move on?
Nope, you're good.
All right. Next thing I had here on my list. So one of the questions here was, how many lineups do I make a night? And we kind of touched on it, but we'll just get a little more specific. So I have one head-to-head / double up / triple up lineup that I put in all of those mentioned contests. And then if I'm not doing MME, if I'm doing MME, then, you know, that's as many lineups as I want to enter into that tournament. But if I'm not, it's one main, it's one hybrid for Quince. I don't put too many of those, maybe two or three a night. And then if I want to play some single entry, I'll do one of those. So that's three different lineups I'll do on an average night. And, you know, you'll hear the term hedge used a lot. Basically, what I'm doing there is, if all of my cash plays fail, I'm hedging in my tournament with the polar opposite of those plays, you know, to make sure I don't lose out on anything big. So that's how I do my nights.
Yeah, I'm pretty much similar, unless I'm chasing a qualifier. Those are usually when I'll put in, you know, 10, 15 lineups, depending on what the buy-in I'm attacking that night is. I'll usually go one head-to-head, and I will build the head-to-head. And yeah, I will attack a lot of my money with that one lineup. And then what I end up doing is I'll build, you know, three to five, you know, or two to four more. And usually I run around three to five lineups a night. depending on kind of what I'm feeling as far as lineup construction or roster construction is. You know, it's not something that I hold myself to. If I want to go attack a, you know, if FanDuel's holding a $1 million tournament at a $4 buy-in, you know, I might go max that out one night.
Sure.
You know, just kind of depends on where I'm at, what I'm feeling, how I'm playing, and how I feel the slate is. I don't just attack bigger tournaments just to attack them. You know, I'll take my shots, you know, 2-3 times a month. But unless I'm attacking a qualifier, it's usually right around the 3-5 lineup.
Yeah, we're pretty similar there. Okay, so that's, I think, good enough to move on to the next part of what we wanted to cover. And we wanted to talk a little bit about the handful of top teams on in each conference. I have a feeling we're going to disagree on a few of these parts here, particularly in the Western Conference. But let's start there.
You want to start in the West?
No, with that topic, whichever conference you want to start with, I'm okay with. But let's start on that topic.
All right, let's start in the East then. How about that?
Sure.
Because the East, I think it's pretty easy. I think it's Boston, it's Philly, it's Toronto, and then it's everybody else. I think Washington has the ability to get a top four seed. Like, they have the potential. They definitely have some of the star power.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they can stop anybody. And I know that they can't always outscore everybody. I don't like the addition of Dwight Howard. I think that was... I think a guy like Dwight Howard, he's not somebody that's going to play a bunch of defense. He's there for boards. It's just, if he can't play defense and he's just going to clog the paint and get putbacks and boards and dunks and all this other stuff, then you're not useful to me when you're going up against Joel Embiid, who can step out and hit a three. The Sixers, who are basically, they're trying to work into a positionless team. You're not going to be able to do much for me against Toronto. You're not going to be able to do much for me against
even Boston with Harper.
Boston.
Same.
You know, it's the same thing. Now, there are two games a year that I use, or multiple games a year that I usually do roster Dwight Howard.
Yep.
And that's against the
Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, that too. But everybody you can roster against Brooklyn, usually. But it's Orlando and it's Atlanta. One, he's from Atlanta. Two, he's obviously got history against Orlando. But when you're looking at the West, I just don't see... the East. I just don't see a lot changing up at the top. You know, outside the fact that, you know, now the Cavaliers are LeBron or without LeBron James. So, Milwaukee's probably going to be that wild card in there.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go, is Milwaukee. I think so a couple things about what you said. First of all, Dwight, his whole prowess was his defense. That's what he, you know, prided himself on. And he got those shot blocks, and he would. But as the game has changed, you mentioned the term positionless basketball. Now that has pretty much taken the league over completely, he kind of becomes obsolete. And so I think that's why we were seeing, you know, Atlanta gave him away for like
peanuts,
a pack of envelopes, right? I mean, here, and you know, Charlotte cut him, and I mean, nobody wants him because he is that big guy that is not going to step behind the arc. He's not going to guard anyone on the perimeter. He's not going to guard those stretch, you know.
And let's face it, he's a cancer in the clubhouse. I mean, every place that he's left says that they've hated him.
You get a chance to play with James Harden, and James Harden's like, screw this guy? I mean, kind of says all you need to know.
I mean, think about it. Like, this is one of the most, like, physically gifted and, at one point, the most dominating center in the game. And yeah. You can't find a team, like,
yeah.
for yeah. more than 2 years?
Well, it's just always about him. And that's the issue that I've had with him when he was with Los Angeles, for example. Oh, I don't want to run pick and roll. What do you mean you want to run pick and roll? That's what the NBA is predicated on nowadays, pick and roll. Pick and pop, pick and roll. It's all about the screens, and he didn't want to do that. He wanted to get the ball down low, back to the basket, post up, where he got double-teamed, and he's a horrible passer out of the double-team.
Yep.
And they would do it every single time. And if he doesn't see that, I mean, show the guy some damn film. I mean, you can't win like that. You just can't. So yeah, I think the Wiz kind of did themselves a disservice. I know they think they got better with him, but they're not. Look,
give me Marcin Gortat over Dwight Howard every single
time. Well, here's the thing about I was going to say was Gortat, though, when it came to those few centers like the Embiids, Karl Anthony Towns, even Brook Lopez, like, would destroy the Wizards last year. Because, yeah, Gortat is a little bit faster, if you will. Not so much faster, but he's more mobile on the outside, but he's just not a very good defender either. He wasn't, at least not.
I was just talking about just every other intangible. I'll take Gortat yes. over Howard.
Sure.
But anyways, we got off on a tangent on the Wizards yeah. here. So, I mean... Yeah.
So for me, just to recap, for me, it's Boston. So I'm actually going to put Toronto first. I think Toronto wins the East. It's going to take them some time to gel, but let's not forget... The Celtics.
They have to also, gel with Gordon Hayward, too.
Yeah. Because, I mean, even Kyrie did. I mean, he played, but he also missed a lot of that time. And him and Hayward haven't played together. So you're talking about two of your starters, all-star starters, are not familiar of playing with one another. So they have some time to gel. Toronto will need some time to gel. But Toronto, I mean, defensively, I think they're going to be just monstrous now with Kawhi. Kawhi and OG.
They're about to say Kawhi and OG. Is,
I mean,
that's one of the best wing. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and that's I think that'll go very, very underrated by a lot of people. I think.
Yeah, because OG's not going to put up the offensive numbers.
That's right. He'll maybe hit a couple threes here and there, but he's locking you down. So you got two lockdown guys out there. That's. And so, I think Toronto goes first. I think Boston next, and then I think Philadelphia. And Philadelphia might even overtake Boston. We'll see. What I'm seeing so far early from Ben Simmons, that kid's special. I don't care that he can't shoot a three-pointer. That kid is special. And what I'm seeing with Fultz and what Fultz has been able to do, and he finally looks like a basketball player. I was worried about that guy. You know, when I hear stuff like he forgot how to shoot, what does that mean? You're a basketball player.
Just get the yips, man. You get in your head. There was a time my junior in high school, I forgot how to throw back to the ball back to the pitcher. I was like Drew Baker off of Major League 2.
But were you drafted first overall?
I get that. I understand that. But it's
a big difference.
No, it's actually quite not. It's something you've been doing your whole life. You've been, like, you're very good at. And doesn't matter what level you do it at, you can't do it. You get in your head. You know, Chuck Knobloch couldn't throw from second to first base.
Yeah.
You know, it just it happens. And what they did with him and shutting him down, at least from the active roster, not putting him out there and working with him gradually over the course of the year. I mean, I've seen his shot. His shot looks three gazillion. His shot last year, let me give you a comparison here. His mm-hmm. shot last year looked like my shot. Like, I can't shoot a basketball to save my life. And his shot looked like my shot. This year, he looks like a completely different player.
He does. And also, even physically, I noticed that he was in his jersey and he's a lot more cut. And
He put on some weight.
He put on some weight. And he also he leaned out too, which is good. So yeah, so Fultz is a big is the X factor there that can take them to potentially being that second or even first. I mean, it depends on how good he is. But they've got the ability to do that. They really
It also depends on how they're a tough team for me to figure out because they have so much talent and so many different ways that they can beat you.
Yep.
But and they can beat you a different way any night. And they're going to be somebody that we're going to have to pay attention to at the beginning of the season as far as DFS is concerned. But I want Embiid to play 70 games this year.
Yeah, that would be great for them.
Like, I could legit see them being a one or two seed in the East if he plays 70 games and plays 70 games hard. Like, not this 15-20 minute BS. I mean, I'm talking about let's log 29 to 33 minutes.
Yeah.
Star out there.
I think he can be there. I think he can get there now. I mean, I saw significant improvement last season.
Oh, yeah. We started to see that.
Yeah. Even, I mean, just the fact that there was no more back-to-back limitations was impressive.
Yeah. And now put it together over the course of a full season.
Absolutely. You're a young player. Show us what you got. Absolutely. Yep. So moving on, anyone else in the East you want to really cover as far as maybe a dark horse?
I think we talked a little bit about Milwaukee. Indiana's going to be pushing. They're probably going to get we've got those first four teams, Toronto, Philly,
Boston.
Okay, so we've got those first three teams. Your next three are going to be Indiana, Milwaukee, and probably
Washington.
So you've got six of the eight seeds there. Who knows? Chicago could make a run. But as far as, like, the Milwaukee Bucks, they've got Giannis. They no longer have Jabari. He's back. He's in Chicago now. But, they started off so well last year and then basically played under 500 ball down the stretch to fall off. Giannis can take over a game any single night. Chris Middleton can help him with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a very good roster. Now they have to put it together, not on the offensive end, on the defensive end. They have to put it together on the defensive end if they want a top four seed.
So where they fell off the most was what you just said was on the defensive end, and it was really protecting the paint. They were okay at running out on the three-pointers. Down low, they were getting crushed. I mean, Henson wasn't cutting it. They've got a little bit more of a defender there in Brook Lopez. I think he helped them a lot.
He's going to help them stretch the floor a little bit, and he's another guy that the defense is going to have to pay attention to, and it's going to ease some of the pressure off of Giannis.
Yes, agreed.
And make no mistake about it. Yes, I know Eric Bledsoe and who's the other one? Malcolm Brogdon.
Mm-hmm.
They're quote-unquote point guards, but make no mistake about it. Giannis is the point guard on that team.
Yeah.
So it's just... It's how can they improve? Indiana, it's the same question for me there. Like, they have questions. It's the East is obviously not deep, and I think those six teams are probably more than likely about 99.9% sure to make the playoffs unless something drastic happens. And then everybody else is kind of fighting and jockeying over those last two spots.
So can I make my dark horse prediction?
If you say the Knicks.
Oh, hell no. Dude, come on. I'm going to go with, I think Orlando might be able to squeeze in the eighth. I like what they're doing. I think that they're finally healthy now. I like Mo Bamba a lot. I love Vucevic. I think Gordon's a good player there. Fournier should be able to step up a little bit. Ross should be able to play, step up a little bit over there. I think they have a, I think they're my dark. Look, are they a good team? No, they're not. But in the East, they don't have to be a good team. Will they make it to the playoffs? Unlikely. But if I'm going to pick a team that is not expected to go in to get in, it's going to be them.
Okay.
That's where I'm going. All right.
I'd like to say yes, but I just there. The bottom part of the East or of the East is bad. Like it's there's not a lot to like about it going into the season. You know, who knows? Maybe in December I'll be changing my tune. But you know, as of right now, I'm not excited about. Because, I mean, can you get excited about the Cleveland Cavaliers and the leader of your team is Kevin Love? I mean, haven't we seen this with the younger Kevin Love before?
There's nothing to be excited about.
I mean, we saw that with the Timberwolves when he was with the Timberwolves. I mean, Lauri Markkanen being out for Chicago for 4 to 6 weeks is going to hurt. I don't trust Kemba Walker running my team. I'm sorry. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. I mean, Brooklyn's Brooklyn. Atlanta has got a great young nucleus and are going to try to gel this veteran leadership to help the young guys along, you know, for a couple years and build up their assets. Detroit, Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond, Blake Griffin. It's not pretty basketball.
It's not pretty.
To me. So. All right, let's go to the West, and then we'll wrap it up for today. okay, so should we preface this?
If you'd like.
Okay, so I'm in Oklahoma. I am a diehard Oklahoma City Thunder fan. Although when you talk to me about my own personal rankings of teams, they are third on my personal rankings. Meaning if all three of my teams were playing at the exact same time, they would be third. Different sports, right. But that doesn't mean that I still don't bleed Oklahoma City Thunder basketball. That is why I don't call Kevin Durant KD anymore. He is Kevin Durant to me. He was KD in Oklahoma City. He is not KD because he is not that same person. Anyways. I will refer to him as Kevin Durant or Cupcake. Bear is in El Segundo or Hollywood or...
None of those places. So
whatever. But he's a Lakers fan.
Yeah.
And he's a Lonzo Ball apologist. And now he's a LeBron James lover.
No. No.
Defender?
No. I'm a watcher. I'm a watcher. Let's see what you can do. I mean, that's...
Come on. He's the best player in the world has been for the last 12 years.
For sure. But what he did before he joined my team wasn't really of an interest, outside of, obviously, DFS. For now, I want to see what can you take a team that was in the bottom of the Western standings for 5 consecutive years, and can you move them past that line? That's what I want to see.
They were, what, 10th last year?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely
improved. Moved up.
They improved, for sure.
A lot of good young talent on that team, so we'll see how they brought in a lot of misfit toys, I guess is what you would call them, so we'll see how they gel. Let's put it this way. And Bear would probably attest to this. We don't care about standings or anything until Christmas. We want them to win, but like I don't care if we play 500 ball, if all of us play 500 ball until Christmas, then okay. Because I don't care how we play in November. I don't care how we play at the beginning of December. I want to know how we're playing in February, March, going into April.
Of course. Yeah.
So, so let's hit the top here. Obviously, the West is going to run through Golden State and
Oh, I Oakland. Thought you were going to say Dallas. I was surprised.
We'll talk about Dallas, but it'll be on another podcast.
I'm kidding.
So the West, yeah. The West runs through Golden State.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's talk about them for just a moment, though. So, I've been hearing a lot of different things, particularly from the national sports media, which, as you know, I listen to a lot of, and not because I enjoy it, because I like to have material to roast them with. So I've been hearing two things. The first thing that I'm hearing is, well, Golden State gets bored with the regular season, so they might not be the top seed because they don't take the regular season as serious as they do, you know, the playoffs, blah, blah, blah.
They might want to this year.
There's some merit to that, but yeah, they've got LeBron in their conference, so they might, you know, wake up a little bit now. The second thing I hear is, well, their season will hinge on, you know, what can they really get from DeMarcus Cousins?
No,
it's not. It's got nothing. If he doesn't play a single game, it makes no difference. The only difference I could see is if he does start getting healthy and he does start playing and he starts fighting with Draymond and he starts fighting with Durant and he starts saying, screw you guys, I want the ball more and blah, 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 which I'm not saying I think will happen, right? But I'm just saying that's kind of the only impact I could see being negative. But they don't need him. They got him knowing he might not play till New Year's because they're like, we're good. We just won the title 2 years in a row. We're, you know, we're 3 out of 4 years, whatever, and we're unstoppable, and we know that. And if you want to come join us, cool. Here's a couple $1 million. I think it was like 5. Here's $5 million for a year. If you can play, great. If not, we're still going to win it all. So, yeah, nothing hinges on DeMarcus Cousins. Win, lose, or draw, play or not play, play well or not play well, they're still kicking butt.
They got DeMarcus Cousins for a mid-level exception, and they got him because JaVale McGee was leaving, and honestly, they need somebody to help out with Steven Adams and Clint Capela. And Nikola Jokic.
I don't even think they got him because of JaVale leaving. I think JaVale left because they knew that, because they, listen, as soon as Cousins said he was willing to go there, nothing else mattered to them. They were going to get him. It didn't matter at that price. They got him because he felt insulted that other teams didn't want to give him big time money. The Pelicans offered him a deal. The Pelicans offered him a very, very substantial deal that he said no to because he wanted the max money. And I'm sorry, you're coming off that kind of an injury after one season where the team was clearly better when you were off the court. Just look at the numbers. Pelicans were better without him. Yeah, he's a fantastic talent.
Oh, I know. I watched the Pelicans go into Oklahoma City 2 days or 2 games after losing him to an Achilles injury and just absolutely dominating and roasting the Thunder.
Running teams out of the gym.
Yes.
And you want max money to make a team not as good? Make no sense. But at the mid-level, the $5 million range a year, by the way, other teams also offered him some decent money. So he's at a point now where he said, you know what? I'm going to go to a team where I don't have pressure to hurry up and get back. I don't have to step on the court the minute I think I might feel okay. I can take my time. And when I do go out and I'm ready to play, show that I'm worth that contract, and next year he's going to want big money. So he's only there for one season,
yeah,
and it's going to be
a pillow deal.
That's all it is. And the next thing about the Warriors, and I want to say, we'll move on to the other topics or other teams. They're going to lose one of their big players next season. They have to pay Durant. They have to pay Klay Thompson.
I think they lose Durant.
They do lose Durant. I don't think Klay's going anywhere. I don't think Draymond goes anywhere.
Yeah, I don't think if you. Unless Durant like takes a big pay cut, I'm sorry, I take care of my homegrown.
But no, of course. But it's not about the pay cut. I think for me, and because you mentioned he's not the same person, he talks so much about what other people say about him in his interviews. Yeah, I hear what the media says, and they say that, you know, my titles are tainted, and, you know, it's not all my team, blah, blah, blah. He pretends it doesn't bother him, but you know what people don't do when it doesn't bother them? They don't talk about it.
He got butt hurt when we closed down his restaurant off his restaurant. The boardwalk.
Yeah, I remember that. So obviously those things bug him. And he's going to want to go to a team and win without those guys, without another MVP. Where that team is, hey, look, we'll see. I mean, a lot of people say he'll come to the Lakers. Well, you think it was an issue going to play with Steph. Imagine him going to play with LeBron.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be the same. There's been talk about him coming back to Oklahoma City. I don't think that's going to happen. And it has nothing to do with Russell Westbrook.
No.
Don't think that he wants to come back to Oklahoma City for whatever reason. I love it here.
Yeah. But, so.
Yes, you're right. I think this is the final shot that we see the Warriors in their current assembly. So.
And listen, you take Kevin Durant off that team, they're still a pretty damn good team.
Oh yeah.
So, no issues there.
Yeah, but you can't take Draymond Green off that team.
He's the heart of the team.
Yep.
He's the heart of the team, and then you've got Steph, who's the identity of the team. But Draymond is the heart of that team, no question. So who's your number two?
It's as much as I hate to say it, it's Houston right now. And it's only because of the fact that I think that everybody is going to beat up on the bottom teams in this conference again. They're going to beat up on the Minnesotas. They're going to beat up on the Memphises. They're going to beat up on the Clippers. They're going to beat up on the Suns and the Kings. That I think they have the least amount to deal with outside of Golden State, to where they can kind of pull away from the pack. And I think that they, don't get me wrong, they've got some issues. Like, you let Trevor Ariza walk, you let Luke Richard and Mba Mute walk, and you replace both of them with Carmelo Anthony. You might have taken a step back, honestly. Yeah. You definitely did defensive-wise, but you might have taken a step back big time offensively, or as a total overall team. But I still think that they can build a good enough lead to get that two spot. Especially now with, like, you know, Russ in Oklahoma City. And I don't think he plays the first week of the season. Just because I wouldn't. And, you know, Andre Robertson's not going to be healthy for the first couple months. So, with the Lakers, they're kind of, you know, make sure that they all gel correctly and... I don't think anybody else has really the guns to push for one of those top two seeds. I mean, Denver's got to gel. Minnesota's got to get rid of Jimmy Butler somehow. New Orleans is what's going to make the division, I feel. And Utah's going to be a defensive, you know, nightmare. And San Antonio's always going to be there, but I don't think that any of them have the guns to go after that number two seed.
Well,
At least from Jump Street.
I'm not as high on Houston this year as a lot of people seem to be.
Oh, I'm not as high on them. I just I don't think that anybody else is going to worry about chasing them.
But two in the West is high, right? I mean, that's your second.
But that's where they were last year.
But they're not the same team last year. That's what I'm getting.
No, I know. But what I'm saying is like, there's too much other change in the everybody else that was chasing them that I think that they can still build enough of a sizable lead to seal that two spot. Now, do I think that they are the second best team in the West? No, I don't. But I think they hit that two seed.
Yeah.
I should have clarified a little bit, maybe.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no, it makes sense.
Okay. I didn't know if that made sense or not, but.
Yeah, it does. I think so. There's just so right now to your comment there, there's too much unknown. Like you mentioned, Minnesota having to trade Butler. Who knows what they'll get back for Butler? If they get another stud in return, I don't think they will. But if they do, I know. But again, it's just unknown. If they do, they could be a very good team. If they don't, maybe they get three medium players and fill out their bench a little bit stronger. I don't know. We'll have to see what happens with them. It's too much unknown. San Antonio. I mean, it's not full haul like some of the other teams, but you know, to lose Kawhi, which they didn't have anyways. So even without Kawhi, they still got in. They're still a pretty good team. In fact, I thought they played extremely well. Losing Manu, you know, look, Ginobili didn't put a whole bunch of minutes in, but he was still a pretty big part of that team's second unit in closing out those games. But the rest of the team and adding DeMar DeRozan, I think DeMar is going to have...
They lose Tony Parker.
Yeah, yeah.
And with Manu and Tony Parker, it's not like, you know, they put a ton in, like you said, but they were still... It was leadership.
Yeah.
And that especially with a lot of the young guys that they had, when you're talking about the elder statesmen now, being LaMarcus Aldridge and Pau Gasol and Patty Mills... it's gonna be how are they gonna work together?
I want to see the jump that DeJounte Murray makes. I'm looking forward to that.
I think so. Pop's gonna let him run.
I don't think he has a choice now.
Yeah, I don't think you have a choice now. Your team's turning over. You need to build that.
That's right. Parker isn't there anymore. Parker's not there to say, okay, Tony, come in and, you know, show the young guy how it's done. He's not there anymore. So yeah.
And they were, down the stretch, they were playing Patty Mills at the two a lot more.
I do remember that. Yep.
I don't think they have – they're not going to have to now with, you know, DeRozan there, but still.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. That's going
to
be
so
fun.
So I think what I'm the most interested to see, not as much because I'm biased, but because I think the national attention is also pretty much in line with where I'm at here. It's just really seeing how the young guys for the Lakers play with LeBron. I mean, what we're seeing in preseason, I'm seeing a lot of positives. First of all, strictly DFS related, the pace this team's going to play at is going to be insane. Lakers and the Nuggets are the two team, and obviously the Warriors, but those are the three teams that I love in terms of pace. I mean, the ball doesn't stop moving. It's just you're getting significantly more possessions per team than you would most other teams. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing where so much fantasy goodness came from last year in Phoenix. I think, again, we're not talking about top teams now. We're talking about top DFS targets. DeAndre Ayton he's a monster, man. He's a monster. He's going to put up a double-double on a nightly basis. He's going to get his blocks. He's going to get, you know, 18 and 12, and he's just going to do it every night. And they're going to give him the ball, and they're going to give him all the minutes he can possibly handle physically. And he's going to be on a lot of my lineups this year. And the same goes for Josh Jackson. And the same goes for Devin Booker. I mean, there's going to be when they play, for example, when they play Memphis, I'm rostering all three. I mean, why wouldn't I? Well, against that defense. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's 3 through 5 is going to be, in my opinion, it's going to be the Lakers. It's going to be Denver, and it's going to be Oklahoma City. I mean, they're going to be, and I guess you could throw Portland into that mix.
Yeah.
And then San Antonio and Utah. I mean, there's your hard and New Orleans. I mean, three through, and we saw it last year. What was it? Going into the final week of the, or final 2 weeks of the season, like they're literally, the Thunder could have finished in the three seed or out of the playoffs.
Out of the playoffs, yeah.
And it changed nightly. And I think I don't see it changing this year.
No.
It's a gauntlet, man. It is a gauntlet, and I would not be shocked if. I mean, personally, I think that your top four seeds in no direct order are going to be Golden State, Houston, Oklahoma City, and LA. I think those are your top four seeds. With Denver, Utah, Portland, and New Orleans pushing in there as well. So
yeah, I'm really interested to see what the Pelicans can do, because you know they gained another big that can run the floor, and Julius Randle, who we saw what he did last year. The guy, I mean, he's got immense talent. Still can't shoot from the outside.
And the resurgence of Okafor, Jahlil Okafor.
Yeah, he just got hurt.
I know.
But yeah, no, he'll be good for them as a backup. I agree. I think a lot of it will boil down to can AD, Julius, and Mirotić gel on the court together, because you've got three very different skill sets. And it's gonna boil down to coaching. Can they get it together? Can they make it gel? And I think losing Rondo is gonna hurt them. I mean, he's a really big. I mean, the guy was, especially in the playoffs. I mean, his double digit assists every night. I mean, he had like a 20 something assist game. I mean, he put a lot of that together, and not. I mean, so they're probably gonna they're gonna run Drew at the point, but they have Elf over there now. I mean. I think you and I both agree we don't think Elf is a very good player right now. But will that change? We'll see. Maybe in his surroundings. Maybe. He was horrible on
cutting
Orlando.
His hair. And
listen, they could. You know, you never know. you never know.
All right, buddy. Well, that's going to do it for us today. We ran a little bit longer than what I was originally thinking that we were going to today. But it's getting back in the swing of things and, you know, getting into the groove, so.
Yep.
Don't know when we're going to be back again. We will be back before the end of the week, though. So for me, for the Bear, and for the DFS Army, we gone.